This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, September 9th, the Board at School edition. I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 8, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry, who's 9, Oliver, who's 7, and Teddy, who's 4. And we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
And I'm Eamon Ismail. I'm filling in for Dan Coyce. I'm probably the least qualified person on this show. I've only been a dad for 2 months. His name is Musa. He's with us at the show, so if you hear some squeaking, that's him.
We're always happy to have you and Musa on the show. Okay. Credentials need not apply.
I'm like, I don't have any parenting blogs yet.
Yes. On today's show, we're going to be answering a listener question from a parent whose 6-year-old has become bored with school. What can her mom do to get her excited about learning again? Then we have a listener who's trying to decide if she should give into her 11, almost 12-year-old's campaign to have a cell phone. Will it be a helpful tool or a terrible distraction? Finally, in Slate Plus, we'll be talking about the whys of everything. Why? Because it is the favorite question of one exhausted listener's son. It is the favorite question of most of our children. What can we do to answer those curious, endless whys? But first, we'll kick off the show as we always do with some triumphs and fails. We'll start with you, Elizabeth. Do you have a triumph or fail this week?
I have a triumph. So first, a very small personal triumph is that today, Teddy started preschool.
Wow.
He went right in. And I picked him up at noon right before coming here, and he had a great day, which means that, so this is week I do not have everyone in school because, you know, of course, now that I have Teddy in school today and Oliver had school today, but Henry had a day off. But it was so lovely. He has not ever had a first day of school. The other two had them in the Netherlands. So Teddy had his first day of school. That was great. But the real triumph for me is that Henry is at this school in the woods, which is this public school here just for 4th graders. And there's only 78 kids. And one of the things they do very early in the year is an overnight where they sleep under the stars. And this had felt like one of the things that was like this insurmountable kind of hurdle because we have all these medications that have to be given at different times and we have anxiety and all these things to kind of deal with. But the school has been like amazing in working with me. So on Thursday, he went to school and I had just signed up with the school to volunteer at all the times that he needed the medicine so that I was there doing other stuff. I could just kind of have him come over. The school can give medicine, but you have to fill out all these forms. And it's like, you know, I'd rather them just be worried about the couple he needs every week. So I was there. It was great. He did see me during, like, they made s'mores. He saw me during that and there were some tears, but that seemed consistent with all the other kids seeing their parents. And even though we have like camped out before, I think he's only spent the night like with we've had 2 families that I've let him spend the night with who have both been like such close friends that they're basically family. And so I don't think he's ever had that, like, I'm going to be somewhere and I don't really know everyone. The couple friends he has made at school, like the really close friends, are all girls. And because of the spend the night, of course, they're separated into boys and girls. So he was a little nervous because he wasn't going to be with these friends that he's really kind of built this connection in the first few weeks of school, but we had talked about it. It was also pouring rain the entire time, and they're not sleeping in tents. They're sleeping camping out under the stars. So some parents had come and put up tarps, but he was just kind of nervous about all of this. And so about 9:30, I gave him his last medicine, gave him a big hug. He went to brush his teeth and I'm getting ready to leave. And the school administrator comes up and says, "We just went out to check the sites and Henry's stuff is soaked. He's the only one whose stuff is soaked. So will you come out and look at this so we can just avoid, you know, the anxiety and a meltdown?" He's like, "I really want to try to salvage this." So I go trudging through the woods. He has a whole bunch of extra sleeping bags. But for Henry, sometimes like he can't make the adjustment to like doing something new without some coaching. So I was thinking like this new sleeping bag is going to be a problem. I'm like texting Jeff to see if he can get a neighbor to watch the kids and run another sleeping bag out there. And we get out to the campsite where all the boys' stuff is. And I walk over to the sleeping bag and it's not Henry's.
Oh,
and
<thank God.
laughs> I had this moment of like, well, thank goodness. And then I stood there and I thought, please, please, please let the kid whose sleeping bag is wet just be cool with a new sleeping bag. So they bring the kids out and the little boy comes over and we're like, "Hey, your bag is wet. Everything else is dry." He had this adorable little teddy bear. "Everything else is dry. We have this whole bag of sleeping bags. Can you pick another one?" The kid's like, "Yeah, no problem." Picks another sleeping bag. We move his spot. He like lays down. It ended up being this sweet little kid that laid next to Henry. And they have become really good friends now from this overnight and kind of this bonding experience of this kid having stuff shaken up. Henry has no idea that we ever thought it was his stuff. And I just feel like the universe gave me this lovely little gift. And I'm so thankful that this other child, you know, it's like you never want this to happen to another kid either. But for this kid to just be so just whatever, it was like, this is so great that it didn't have to be Henry, but also it didn't ruin this other child's time. And it went so well that we actually picked him up from the camping trip and we're going camping on our own. He asked if he and his little friend Asher could sleep in their own tent. So we pitched their own tent for our 3-night camping trip. And the two of them stayed in their own tent for the trip. And I just feel like it was this wonderful learning experience. And none of the bad things I was worried about happened. So big, big triumph for the new camp family.
I'm so proud of them. That's amazing.
That is amazing. A lot of coordination. A lot of moments where tears seemed imminent. And yet...
we survived.
It all worked out. You survived. Very nice. What about you, Eamon?
I've got a great one. Musa went to the beach for the first time in his whole life yesterday.
Yay.
Yeah, we only felt confident enough because recently I discovered a new off button. Like here you can hear him squirming, but check this out. Done. mostly. But all he has to do is stand up and he calms right down. How amazing is that?
Aw,
that's awesome.
It's a new trick.
Did you put his feet in the sand?
No way. His skin is so like sensitive right now that I thought like if he were to even get near the sand, it'll just be stuck there forever. Like, you know, when you stab yourself with a piece of pencil, then it like stays in your body forever.
Yeah.
I thought like the tiniest little pebble could do that.
Aw.
He didn't even get like any direct sun. I was very careful about that because, you know, I just like had read online and spooked myself. Everybody was like, "Don't take your baby. Don't take your baby," on like the message boards and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to take him, but I'm going to be careful. And it was great. It was great. My wife and I both took turns going into the water and hanging out. Oh. We ate a lot of snacks. And he, for the most part, was just chilling, enjoying the breezes and enjoying the new sounds.
That's awesome.
That sounds like a very lovely way to spend Labor Day. So big triumph. I have a fail. Not a huge fail, but I went to the beach yesterday with two of my friends from college, someone who I spent a lot of time with in college and someone who we always liked each other and never really like got to hang out and like have, you know, hung out a few times in the past year. She's moved out here. And so it's like, cool. Like, oh, we can finally be friends. And like, I'm like, okay, girls' day on the beach. In my mind, and maybe because I'm forever 21, I don't know. Like, I think of the inevitability of like Instagram photos, and like, so I still put on like a super slutty swimsuit because I have no class and nobody else was dressed like that. I mean, it was just the three of us. It's fine. No one said anything, but do you ever just feel like when you're off program, you know, like, here's the script.
Yeah.
And here's you over here. And so I felt a little cognizant of that. And so that was my fail. Not a tremendous one because I had other options. Like I eyed other options. You know? And I took not one single photo of myself because, in fact, I was the only one who didn't take any pictures. I think partially because the conspicuousness of my bathing suit just was enough. I mean, it was not ridiculous. It was ridiculous in the context of, we also went to a super small beach that was like mostly families and stuff, which, you know, I didn't know. Like, I mean, I guess I heard small beach, but like didn't think about that or whatever. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was just still like, okay, well, that's the itsy bitsy bikini girl.
Maybe you inspired them though to be more, you know, like, I mean, I totally feel you, because if I show up in the wrong outfit for what everyone else is wearing, it really throws me off. Like, I like to be of the same, the same type of stuff. So like, if we're all gonna be like, if I show up and everybody's in a dress and I'm in yoga pants, I feel uncomfortable. I just feel like, oh, I missed the memo.
I missed the memo. Even if it fits the occasion. Like if everyone has on sundresses and I have on jeans and sandals.
Yes, exactly.
It may be appropriate, but I still feel off book. I feel wrong.
I agree. But I do think in this case, maybe though, because sometimes when I show up and my friends are wearing something that's like very trendy or very, I think like, oh, I could be wearing this. Like, I didn't choose this because I don't feel confident or I don't feel this, you know, but then a friend will wear it and I'll be like, wow, she looks great in a romper, right? Like, or she looks great in this. Like, I should wear those. I should feel more confident. But I do really feel for you. And I know how it just like takes the wind out of your sails.
Yeah. And like, now that I think about it, they're not inclined to dress that way anyway.
Yeah.
So it kind of made like all the makings of Jamila put on a different bathing suit were there. And I just, I have like, literally, you've seen my bras. Like, yes, I've talked about this on the show that I have, like, those are my bathing suits on the bottom row. Like, I
lots of options.
There were options. That's where I failed myself. There have been times where it's like, well, I just didn't have anything else to put on. It's like, no, I'm just an asshole, apparently. And like, my mom has cautioned me against being that person. You know, like, she tells this story of like the time she wore this bikini. And granted, there were like, they were mixed company. And they were like, and she tells it as like the last time she ever wore a bikini. And like,
it's the end.
Other women's men were there and everybody was uncomfortable and she didn't like that. And I was just like, well, mom, we're two very different people, because I'm used to making people uncomfortable. And like, I'm just uncomfortable that they're uncomfortable. But like, and I don't think I made anybody uncomfortable, but like, it just, I don't know. It is so funny because she always loves to say we have the same life. And I'm like, no, we don't. And I'm like, here I am. Here we are. It happened to me. So I can't tell her. So I hope she doesn't listen to the show this week, because I will 500% not be telling my mother that I wore a bikini and that it was inappropriate. Because I think her goal is like for me to just find these things to be inappropriate in life in general.
No.
You know.
Next time you got a text, I'm wearing a bikini, you should wear one too.
I will. And it's like... And I almost said, girl, I kind of want to take some pictures. I need to take, you know, like, I wanted to take some pictures. That's why I put it on. And I thought about it. I was like, when I got there, I was like, I didn't really even feel like doing that anyway. It was a turn. I was like, today was totally a chill day. And I did chill. And the thing is, like, because I just wear bikinis, like, we've talked about the, like, how I thought everybody sunbathes in their swimsuit thing. So, like, I've just, I don't know, like, this is just my problem. Maybe this is just my cross to bear. Maybe I'm just the woman in the swimsuit. But what are you going to do? It's not the first time. Won't be the last. Before we move forward, let's handle a little business.
First, please subscribe to the show. It helps us out and the show will automatically show up in your feed. So it's good for you and it's good for us. And if you want even more Mom and Dad are Fighting goodness, you should become a Slate Plus member. You'll get a whole bonus segment every week. Here's a sneak peek of what you could be hearing today about the curious whys of the world.
Teddy is still very much in the why, or the more annoying, a very specific question. Last night, right before bed, he said, why do we use money? And then I gave this answer. And then he said, but what is the economy? I was like, yes, you can major in this in college.
Not only will you get fun extra segments like that, you'll even get bonus episodes of shows like Culture Gabfest and Big Mood, Little Mood, and you'll get unlimited reading on the Slate website without ever hitting a paywall again. So if you want to support us, please do. Sign up for Slate Plus. It's only $1 for the first month. Just go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Slate's parenting newsletter is the best place to be notified about all of our parenting content, including Mom and Dad are Fighting, Care and Feeding, and much more. Get all of Slate's great parenting content in your inbox every week by signing up at slate.com/parenting email. And before we get into the main show, let's take a quick break.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
And we're back.
All right, let's get into our first listener question, being read, as always, by the amazing Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, we're only 1 week into the school year, and my first grader has already started complaining that she's bored at school. Frankly, she sounds like a jaded office worker. I ask her what she did or learned, and she answers, "Nothing. It's so boring. We're doing the same thing that we did yesterday. It's all the same." She enjoys her friends and has fun in her after-school program because they do fun things. What do I do at this point? Talk to the teacher or wait and see? For context, she went to a very academically oriented preschool and spent some time there doing their kinder program last year when schools had shut down. She's now in her neighborhood public school. It's possible that what she's learning now is a bit repetitive, but I truly don't know.
What do you think, Elizabeth?
So I think, dear letter writer, take a deep breath. It's going to be okay. It's 1 week of school. I can't be sure, but it sounds like from Henry's report and from what I remember, like the first week of school is a lot of repetitive stuff. It's a lot of, especially in the early grades, it's a lot of like just getting down the routine, seeing what people know. I think there are a lot of reasons that children can be bored when doing academics. I think it can be, of course, that they're not challenged. I think it can be that also that the material or what's happening is over their head. And so it's easy to just kind of ignore it or say, "I'm bored. I don't get this." It can also be just a way of saying, like, "I don't like sitting. I like to be up running around. I like to be more active, and I am bored that I have to sit at this desk." So I think there's a lot of things going on. I would definitely let it shake out. There is usually in the early fall some kind of parent-teacher conference. I think they put this kind of early so that you have a chance for your child to kind of adjust to school, and then you have a chance to check in. Of course, like if you notice other kind of disturbing behavior, I think it's never a bad thing to check in with the teacher, but I would really caution you against checking in the way of like, "My kid is actually bored," as opposed to saying like, "She's coming home saying things are repetitive." So I'm just curious what your take on what's going on in the classroom is, because I do think that most teachers eventually introduce some kind of system of like, when you're done with work, you can grab a book, or this is what we do. Because when you're managing a classroom with people that work at all different speeds, there has to be a way for kids to be done and not be disruptive. So something is there. It's just a question of, does your child know that yet? Do they know the rules? So I would definitely, though, in the first week, kind of hold off. But in the next few weeks, if it continues, and certainly this is something you can discuss at the parent-teacher conference, to just say, "This is what she's telling us. How can we as parents help support those rules or the systems you have in place?" And I also think it's a great time to encourage her to solve some of her own problems. Like ask her, "Well, what is it that you feel bored? You know, have you done this work before? And is there other things you can do? Is there a rule about, you know, what you can do when you're done with your work?" Like those sort of things, because I think it's important that that kids start to learn to handle some of these problems. Look, we're all going to be in situations in which we are the smartest person in the room. We're all going to be in situations in which we are the dumbest person in the room. And it is important to know what to do in both those cases and how to manage this kind of boredom. I don't know. That's my... So basically, I think you just need to calm down.
I'm so glad you made those points because I don't even know how I would begin to answer that problem. I mean, in so far of what I've seen in other kids, because my baby is way too small, 2 months, but I've seen them try and communicate certain things by using something that's like within their language. So sometimes when they say, I'm bored, really, it just means that there's like something else going on. Maybe they like feel shy or they aren't sure what to do when like the in-between times or something else. So like give your teacher the benefit of the doubt because I kind of feel for them because they're the ones who have to like do the repeating if it is repetitive and try and see if there's like another fire that needs being put out.
I think you're both raising really good points, and I'm bored is definitely can be a cover up for I'm insecure, I'm nervous, I don't like this, I don't get it. But the school year is so brand new, as Elizabeth said. Like, I think you really need to give everybody some time to get used to it. Like, the first week of school can be super repetitive because you're trying to get all these very different little learners into the habit of raising their hand to use the restroom or to ask a question. And, you know, there's a lot of rules and just clutter that goes into the first few weeks of school at most public schools, honestly. That said, I also had a child that went from a really academically and culturally focused preschool into a local public school that was a high performing public school, but also just kind of came with some of the challenges in terms of resources and classroom ratios, you know, et cetera, that come with public schools. So do be mindful of, you know, what your child is experiencing academically. And if you find yourself at a point where it seems that they're not being challenged and not getting what they need to, you know, successfully make it from one grade to the next and having learned things as opposed to simply passing, then, you know, perhaps it's time to reconsider the school. But I think at this point, you should give your teacher and the little one some grace.
I also wonder a little bit, like, from the mom's perspective, like, she says she asks questions like, what did you learn today? Or what did you do? And I don't know about you guys, but those, like, my kids don't respond very well to those questions.
Same.
I find that if I'm, like, more just kind of let them talk or say, like, did you do X, like, something that I know that they do or did, you know, also maybe asking about the stuff that she really does enjoy and see if the other stuff kind of trickles in, I find better. Like, my kids are much more likely to answer questions about like what they did on the playground than what they actually did in school. And I have to just kind of trust that eventually they're going to supply me with some of that information in order to have a conversation, if that makes sense.
Is there anything that this parent can do at home that can get their kid more interested in school? I almost feel like if I was in that situation, I would be trying to think of something, some activity that's like play related that could also involve them like sitting down and drafting, like drawing or something. I don't know.
I think that could work too. I think that like this is definitely a good time to try and be collaborative with the teacher, you know, and talk about ways to keep your little person and other kids that are losing focus engaged. I think there's also the big COVID asterisk next to everything that we have to remind ourselves that like this teacher is not having a normal school year, that these kids have not had a normal trajectory from preschool to kindergarten to first grade, that everything is a bit off. So expect the school year to be challenging in ways that it would not have been if we weren't living through a pandemic, and, you know, just be patient with everyone involved, but be proactive and ask questions. But as Elizabeth said, your kid's definitely at the age in which the how was school, what'd you learn today, what did you do, what stuck out for you question is just likely to be met with absolutely nothing. But if you listen, they may drop some nuggets of, you know, interest throughout the dinner time conversation, you know, like their eyes will light up and they'll mention something that happened in science lab or whatever, you know, and you'll figure out what they actually care about. But on the ride home from school, forget it.
What I won't do what my parents did, which is say school's supposed to be boring. Suck it up. Because like that's sort of like the message was like I was bored. And like, well, who cares? You're going to go to school and you're going to like it. That didn't really work. But what did get me more interested in school, I can't remember being like kindergarten or anything, but like definitely first grade, was doing extracurriculars and getting involved in like the post-school life. And I remember one time I asked for the teacher to give me something else to do after I was done. And she handed me a broom and said, sweep. And I was like, yeah. I felt like the coolest kid. I loved it, actually. I was like, I felt like I had a responsibility. And then it started this whole trend where everybody else wanted to turn with the broom afterwards. It was first grade. Like, that's sort of like...
The smartest teacher.
That's so funny. the smartest teacher of all time.
But after that, I couldn't wait to get to school because I was like really excited to get through the stuff that I thought was boring so I can get to the broom and do all the other stuff.
There's a really great podcast that we listen to called Wow in the World. It's like a family podcast, like for kids. And they actually have an episode on the importance of being bored. And so you could also listen to that. Like, listening to that did kind of knock this idea out of my kid's head that boredom was something I was supposed to fix. And instead, it's something like that they can either sit in and that's okay, or something that they can fix by, you know, listing things alphabetically in their head. I don't know, thinking like this is an opportunity for your brain to wander and do things. So that might be something too, is explaining kind of the importance of boredom and also the importance of what's happening in school. Like, yeah, not everything we do is always like as fun as recess and extracurriculars, but there's definitely reasons for it and finding value in that. And also kind of this idea. I mean, I think that's kind of fundamentally different than like, of course it's boring, but saying like, well, boredom has a place too, right? Like this is something that exists in life. We as adults are often bored. We're often forced to be bored. So, you know, like no DMV is worried about. You can't just be like, I'm bored. Fix this for me.
That is life. Life can be boring sometimes. That is a lesson to learn too. Okay, well, listener, thank you so much for your letter. And we hope that the school year turns around very quickly for your little one. I'm sure that it will. If you have a conundrum that you'd like for us to consider, please send us an email at momanddad@slate.com. Okay, now we're going to take a quick break.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Let's get on to our second listener question. Take it away, Sasha.
Hi, Mom and Dad. My 11, almost 12-year-old is lobbying hard for a cell phone. He's starting middle school in a new building this year and may have to get himself to and from school sometimes. Plus, he has ADHD. So I'm hoping that the calendar app on his phone would be helpful to him for remembering events and deadlines. And I'm also really looking forward to him learning how to do his own social coordination. On the downside, I'm worried he'll get distracted by it. He already has a lot of access to devices at home, but they can't travel with him to school. I'm very concerned about social media, but I would definitely block any and all social media apps for years to come. And I'm a bit worried he'll lose it. He's pretty responsible, but again, ADHD. I know middle school is a wild world. Should I be worried about things like kids sending inappropriate pictures at that age or bullying? What else am I missing about cell phones and kids?
The short answer is yes, you should be worried about all of those things, but that doesn't mean that your kids shouldn't have a phone. Amen, what do you think?
I might be a little hardliner on this, but I'm going to say no cell phone, dude. Come on.
Like, no.
Especially if you're worried about them not being able to reach you. If that's really what you're worried about, give them a piece of paper with your phone number on it. And I'm sure somebody around will have a phone. I might be the only one here who's gonna feel this way, but come on, like, isn't 12 years old like way too young for something like that? In my view, it could only be distracting, and it can't really serve them in all the ways that you hope that it might. I think it's too high of a risk, to be honest. I know for sure that my kid isn't going to be able to get a phone until they can afford it. I remember when I was a kid. I know. I'm getting looked.
We don't believe you.
Not one second.
At least when I grew up, we had pay phones. So I had no problem finding a spot. As long as I had a couple quarters, I was able to reach people when I needed to. But nowadays, maybe an iPod Touch or something, where if they can get Wi-Fi, they can make a call or a text or something. I would be so worried about handing someone a device like a cell phone where they can reach the world at any time in their pocket. It's going to be just so hard for them to create more connections with the real world at an age when they really should be. That's just how I think about it.
I actually don't disagree with you. My gut reaction is no, you should not give a phone to this child. I think that particularly with ADHD, which is in some level like a dopamine seeking, you're seeking a lot of that hit, and cell phones are that. They can give you that. And so I think that even though you have a rule follower, I just think, how many times have I been sitting up way too late and I'm scrolling through Instagram or scrolling through something, mm-hmm. getting that hit? I know I need to put the phone down. Guys, I am an excellent rule follower. I am excellent at keeping a schedule. And still, I have seen numbers on the clock come that should not come because I have to get up early. So if I can't handle it, how is this kid, you know, whose brain is not fully formed because they're only 12, you know, going to be able to handle this? I think there are other options. I definitely think like a paper planner, or looking into, there are definitely phones with kind of very limited means, understanding what is available at the school to communicate that they got there or not. I know, like at School in the Woods, which is my experience with public schooling here, you're able to call and check in. We also have an app that shows who has been marked present for attendance and work it out that way. So there are other options available, I think. I just don't see that for what you need, that you're going to be able to control, unless you get one of these devices that like only calls home or only has a couple of apps. I also think, you know, you say like, oh, I could use it for a calendar. I think managing that is so difficult. Like, there are adults that struggle with that, and really understanding, like, I have to put all this stuff in, I have to be able to type, I have to then check the phone. It really tethers you to this. And something like a paper planner is a better way also to create that mind hand kind of, I don't know, for me, when I write something on a calendar, it's like I remember it, versus like when I type it in, I'm really relying on the phone to remind me of it. So figuring some of that out. Now, all that being said, I know that like between 12 and 13 is the average age for kids to be getting cell phones. And I think there is a real chance that this turns out to be what you decide to do. And I think that if you do that, you need to have really clear limits on what your expectations are for your child with this phone and what the deal is. If they break those expectations, there need to be really set expectations of like privacy. And there are some apps out there. The app Forest is a focus app that keeps you in particular apps and also encourages you to not have your phone open during certain times. I think you really need to look into things like that, because I just have this sense that there's some inevitability that like you're asking permission in this letter because you would feel better if they had a phone. And if that's the case, then that's the choice you're making. And I think that's okay. But I think you really need to understand that once you hand them a phone, it's very hard to take it away. But Jamila, what do you think?
I actually do agree, but there's a big asterisk. If your child is going to be traveling to and from school by themselves, they need a phone. Like, I don't think that any kid that has a daily commute at this point should be without a phone. Like, there is a time in which we, you know, I'm sure the three of us all did daily commutes without cell phones, but there wasn't necessarily the easy option to have one. I don't like the idea of your child being at the behest of another kid or having to engage with an adult, especially if something were to go wrong on the trip, you know, to or from school. So if that is the case, they should get the most limited access to virtually nothing, basic cell phone option that exists. They still make those kiddie phones. You can get them the type of phone they have for senior citizens, whatever it is. It doesn't need to give them access to the whole world, just the ability to make a phone call in an emergency. And you can even have them check it in when they get in the house, you know, so that they're not using it to make phone calls without your permission. With that, you know, you're not far off from it being a reasonable thing. You know, I struggle with, I don't know exactly what the age is. For me, I think it's really a matter of like, when are you commuting back and forth? Right. But like, you know, almost 12 is almost 13. Right. And I would imagine that a 13-year-old would probably be a reasonable candidate for a cell phone. You know, this is somebody that may be going into high school or is almost going into high school, who has a social life of their own and, you know, communicates with friends outside of school. You may not even have a house phone. So they're going to need the, you know, ability to call people without saying, "Mom, can I have your phone?" every 5 minutes. And at some point, like, even with access to other devices to do schoolwork, there are games and apps and things that you will deem to be permissible for your children. It may be, you know, there's a lot of people use the Facebook Messenger for Kids app. I haven't tried it yet, but I know a lot of kids Naima's age that use it and their parents love it. You're just going to have to start thinking about what safety looks like for you and what you want to block and what you want to allow and start investigating those things. You know, I think that's what it really comes down to, that even when you are ready to put a cell phone in their hand, you're not just giving it to them like here. You know, it's not a matter of like either you don't have one, which means you have no access to inappropriate content, which is wrong because one of his friends undoubtedly has a cell phone with no parental controls and they're bringing it to school and the kids are looking at it, you know, like that's going to happen at some point if it hasn't already. You can't keep them from everything, but you also can't cut them off from the rest of the world in a way that the rest of the world is using to communicate. And I do wonder if, because of the pandemic, kids that might have not been really at the cell phone age yet, like, is this becoming an 11 and 12 thing as opposed to a 13-year-old thing? Because of, like, Naima had access to a phone for a while during the pandemic, and then I realized that was absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, she has a tablet, which is effectively the same thing, but I realized that, like, allowing her to play with the phone and feel like it was hers was, you know, like you said, taking it away was like a thing. And I was like, this was never like a forever thing. This was like, mommy needs you out of her hair. This is really the wild, wild west around here. Here's a phone to play with, you know, but.
Jamila, during that time, what did you do about like privacy with texting and with all, like, was Naima clear that there was no expectation of privacy, or did you let her have set, like, in terms of when she's texting friends? Or, cause I know like sometimes she'll text a friend or your mom on your phone. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always, like, my face is always right in her, you know, anything she's doing. I'm like, you don't have privacy on a device. Like, you're not there yet. When you, I have it, you know, because she'll be like, oh, yeah, my dad said, and I'm like, why are you reading your text, you know, the text messages between your dad and I? And like every so often I might be like, oh, text your dad and say we're outside or whatever. But like, typically, you know, like my text messages are for me. And like, she gets a little bothered by that, like, you know, hypocrisy, if you will, that like she doesn't have unfettered access to my communication, but I have it to hers. But like, yeah, I think so long as I do think that, like, for the most part, for the majority of the time that you're paying a child's cell phone bill, I do think you should have access to their communication. You know, I think there becomes a point as a teenager and you decide what that looks like, because some 15-year-olds might not be ready for that. It might be like, nope. You know, like, you get this device, but I'm still going to read it at any time.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted a cell phone when I was like 16, and a lot of other kids in my high school had cell phones. And I remember asking for one and my parents literally just laughed and they were like, sure, how are you going to pay for it? You know, and there was just no way for me to do it. But I remember part of the reason why I really wanted one was because a lot of other kids had them.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much is this mom trying to justify this purchase for herself when really their kid just really just wants one to fit in with their friends or to be like anybody else? So I almost wonder, even if you were to give them one with the expectation that they're going to use it for this and you're going to have all these parental controls and everything else, you might be feeding into something else that's not healthy. This idea that they need to consume, they need to be consumers so that they can have healthy social lives. That's just something I'm worried about, right? I like set my mind, and you're probably right that it's going to change 1,000 times before it's like time to make that choice. But I've already decided that my son's not going to be getting any of the cell phone stuff. He's not going to be getting all the stuff that his friends are going to have at that same time. And I'm going to drill it into his head that you're different and you have this whole set of guidelines that you have to live by because you're my child. And so I've already decided that that's how I'm going to do it. But you're probably right. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow I'll have a different answer. Maybe I'll talk to the wife and she'll have a whole thing and I just got to take her lead. Who knows?
I really do feel for this mom because I know with Henry going off to school, one of the things I was worried about is he has to take these medicines and remember that. And of course, there are people at the school that help him remember that. But how convenient would it be if he had a device that went off, or I could remind him, or I could do this. But looking at that, I was thinking could I get him some kind of smartwatch where I could just send stuff so that it would be a receiving only? There are all these options, but I agree with you. At this point, I've sort of decided, no, all of that opens doors that I'm not really interested in walking through with him at this point. But I do think that for as much as, to me, 11 and 12 seem so young. But I also don't know what that's going to hold for us or where he's going to be or what our schedules are going to look like. And at some point, the desire to also make my own life easier by having them have some contact, there's a real pull to that.
I think as long as you can keep your children away from a phone as you can, you should. They have the rest of their lives to be unhealthily attached to these devices. You just also want to make sure that they're never in a situation in which they can't reach you easily. And, the fact that payphones don't exist anymore really has changed it. I know in theory you could ask anyone, but who wants to ask somebody to borrow their cell phone? Especially a stranger. But we're all on board with you saying no. Well, letter writer, thank you so much and good luck with this. You will be fighting with your child over cell phones for the next 7 to 8 years. Best of luck. If you have a conundrum, again, that you want us to consider, please send us a note to momanddadatslate.com or post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook. And of course, before we get out of here, we're going to do some recommendations. Elizabeth, what do you have for us this week?
So we were camping this weekend, and one of the things we like to bring is this Wise Owl hammock and straps. They're like a travel hammock. You can basically put it up anywhere, and the straps wrap around the trees without doing any damage to them. They're really cool, and we love to bring that. And now I have more independent readers than non-independent readers, and so we put up 3 hammocks, and the kids all just sat in them and looked at books for an hour every day camping. It was amazing. So I would definitely recommend it. We bring them most of the time. I just have them in the car because you never know when you might be somewhere and just put up these little hammocks. You could certainly also put them up in your backyard. And we have little clips here at home that we can clip them to indoor and have just these little collapsible hammocks. They pack really small. The straps are really small and they just wrap around a tree. It's really great. So they're made by Wise Owl and I highly recommend them.
Very nice. Eamon, what about you?
Okay, so I got something really bougie this time. I actually got this a couple weeks back, but now I just thought of the ultimate baby function. My baby's still drinking a lot of formula, and so we are constantly packing little measured out portions with us, but we're always looking for a good water source before we start mixing it and using it. And I went and did this impulse buy. I got this really fancy water bottle that has a UV ray built in. It's called the Lark bottle. And what it does is it shoots UV rays into the water every 90 seconds and kills 100% of the bacteria, making it safe for baby consumption. So I'm really hype about that. We haven't used it yet, but if it works as advertised, this is going to be a lifesaver because we are planning on going on a couple trips real soon. And we aren't sure what the water situation is going to be exactly. So in this case, we could just pour in some tap, zap it, and then throw some formula in there and give it to our baby. I'm really, really excited about it.
That is very cool. One of the most annoying things about traveling with a baby who's drinking formula is trying to find good water. So it sounds super useful. All right. Well, I am going to recommend making your own bootleg sangria. It might not be bootleg. You may actually have all the proper ingredients in your house, but I had a beach day yesterday, as I mentioned earlier, disgracefully. but I did succeed in, or I triumphed in bringing some sangria that I made essentially with just stuff that I had in the house. You can find a cheap, sweet red wine. Manischewitz wine is good for making sangria because it's already sweet. You don't have to add much sugar. I used some of Naima's fruit cups and I had some fresh strawberries and blueberries. I made a red one and a white one. And I didn't have brandy, so I used at Grand Marnier. And so I did one with Grand Marnier and one with rum and also Grand Marnier. And they were both really good. I did a white one and a red one. And it was super easy. And like, even though I did go to the grocery store to get like a little bit of fruit and another bottle of wine, I really could have just made it with what I had in the house. So all you need, fruit, juice, wine, sugar, if you please, some sort of spirit. Soak the fruit, introduce it to the wine.
How long do you have to soak the fruit?
Ideally, at least 2 hours. You can do it overnight. I mean, I did it before getting dressed for the beach and it was just gone. You know, because it's sitting in the spirit while it's in the bottle with the wine anyway. It just, you know, it's not the same as having like the really pungent fruit. Like at one point in my life, I was a sangria master. I took it very seriously and I made it all the time. So I always had all the proper ingredients and I would let my fruit soak forever and stuff. But I found that people tend to like it either way. It's kind of hard to get wrong.
I think I've always been like, I have not attempted it because by the time I think it's a good idea, I like have some time, but not a lot of time. So you're saying do it anyway.
Do it anyway. And it's so, it really doesn't have to be a big, like it can be a big production with a lot of fruit cutting up and a lot of soaking and all that stuff. Or it can be really quick and dirty in like a bowl with some fruit and let it soak in there and pop that in the refrigerator and, you know, put your wine in whatever container you're going to use. I put one back in the bottle.
And then the other way,
just pour it. I use the funnel and like pour it back in the bottle and I squoze the fruit in there. And then the other one, I have a like a pouch thingy that I got from Nordstrom Rack or whatever, you know, where you can like fill it up and it has a wide mouth and then you can squeeze it out with a little spout. So it's very convenient and everyone is happy when you show up with sangria. I promise you.
I love this.
It's like bringing a bottle of wine, but with a higher alcohol content.
Love it.
That's our show, everyone. One more time, if you have a question for us, expert advice givers, email momanddad@slate.com or post to the Slate Facebook parenting group. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Morgan Flannery for Elizabeth Newcamp and Ayman Ismail. I'm Jamila Lemieux. Thank you for listening.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.